This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're going to discuss a new marijuana legalization bill that's being considered in the Vermont House. But before we do, we're going to have a conversation with Senator Patrick Leahy about last night's important ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which unanimously rejected President Trump's travel ban from nine largely Muslim countries. Senator Leahy, welcome back to Vermont Edition. Well, we're trying to connect with Senator Patrick Leahy in Washington to get his thoughts on this important court ruling and what it means going forward with the United States Supreme Court. Hopefully we can get this line cleared up here in the next couple of seconds. Senator Leahy, are you there? Well, apparently we still have some problems getting Senator Leahy on the line. We do want to discuss this with him. Later in the program, we are going to be looking at the new legalization of marijuana bill at the Vermont House, which takes a very different approach from the Senate bill that was considered last year. The Senate bill last year had a strict state regulatory structure with retail stores and the taxing of marijuana. The new approach in the House is a more personal approach. It allows individuals to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana and also to be able to grow several plants. And we're actually going to start this part of the program, since we're having problems with Senator Leahy on the line. We're going to start our discussion about marijuana and this new bill and get our guests in here in just a moment. Moortown Representative Maxine Grad is the chairwoman of the House Judiciary Committee. She's also one of the sponsors of this bill.
Well, this is a new proposal. It's a new year, and it fits into our work on looking at the criminal justice system and where are we spending our resources, how are we spending them, and what results we're getting. It also will bring parity to people who want to grow a few plants for their personal use. Under our current system, that's a crime.
And what are House lawmakers taking a different approach this year? What's the outlook for this legislation? So we're going to start our discussion about marijuana now, and hopefully we can get Senator Leahy on the line a little later in the program. Our two guests today, Wells River Representative Chip Conquest, who's also a sponsor of the House bill, and Margot Austin, who is a student assistance program counselor at Burlington High School. She's also a licensed drug and alcohol counselor. I'd like to welcome both of you to the program on very short notice. We thought it was going to be 10 or 15 minutes from now.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. It's good to be here.
Thank you for having me, Bob. I appreciate it.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. What do you think of this new House approach, not taxing or selling marijuana in state stores like it's done in Colorado, but the plan that legalizes the possession of small amounts of marijuana and allows folks to grow a limited number of plants at home? What do you think of that approach? Do you like the state regulatory approach better? Or do you think both plans are a mistake? And perhaps you oppose the legalization of marijuana in Vermont? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. So, Representative Conquest, last year the Senate passed a bill modeled after that law in Colorado, retail stores, taxing of marijuana. Your bill takes a very different approach. Why is that a better way to go this year?
So for me, there are a number of reasons that I don't think we ought to be looking at the full retail, licensed retail and growing model at this point. For one thing, you know, some people have suggested we do that as a revenue source, and that seems to me really a bad way to approach the question about whether marijuana should be legalized in Vermont. During the debate around this last year, when we had public hearings particularly, but also in committee some, I heard a fairly substantial number of people talking about the fact that they supported legalization of marijuana or perhaps didn't oppose it, but they weren't comfortable with the idea of this sort of large-scale Colorado model where we'd have probably at least some large growers, perhaps out-of-state interests, doing that growing, and particularly with the retail aspect of it, both stores, storefronts, and advertising. You know, and a regulated market, which, you know, I'll say up front, there are some valid reasons to consider going that direction. But in addition to the other reasons I don't think we should do that right now, it takes – a regulated market takes a substantial regulatory apparatus to put into place. And that requires an upfront investment, which, you know, until the revenues from taxes come in. And, you know, I don't think that's something that's in our budget now and or will be probably in the very near term. And, you know, on a personal level, I don't feel like that's really the place that Vermont government ought to be putting its focus and its time right now. For me, this – what we proposed is an incremental step. It's people – we've had decriminalization. I think people have kind of gotten comfortable with that, that there was wide support for that step when we took it. And this is the next sort of logical step. It's an incremental one. It may be that someday Vermont decides that it's the right thing to do to have a regulated grow and retail. But for me, this makes sense as a sort of a next fairly small step.
So last year, the House made it pretty clear it did not favor the Senate approach of going that big state regulatory model. What do you think the chances are for this bill this year? Do you sense there's more support for it?
You know, I can't say that I've talked to large numbers of House members about this particular bill, but my sense is that people that were uncomfortable with the full retail model would be more comfortable with a small legalization, small amounts for personal use. I think that's true in our committee, and I suspect that that's true in the body as a whole.
Margo Austin, you had concerns about the approach taken by the Senate last year, if I remember correctly. Do you find this approach to be any better?
Hi again, Bob. I just wanted to just back up and introduce myself and just say a little bit about what my work history is for folks. So I'm a student assistance program counselor and have been for over 20 years and a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, and work with primarily youth on the front lines through schools. I worked at Spectrum Youth and Family Services and created the student assistance program. So my concerns are many, and this is a really complex issue. When you want to look at a vulnerable population, which certainly youth are, and want to look at what are the factors that increase substance use, we have a pretty clear perspective on what those are, and it's availability. It starts with availability. So when we increase availability, we have concerns. And then when you come to marijuana, I think one of the things I want to talk about is what is the perception of harm in the culture currently? And for when it comes to marijuana, what we know and we see in the youth risk behavior survey data, it is woefully inadequate that young people and adults, frankly, have a pretty poor understanding of what current marijuana actually does to the brain. And what we know, research says in the year 2017 about how it impacts people. And so my concern is whatever we roll out in terms of maybe changing laws, my biggest concern is how are we doing prevention and changing some of that both perception of harm and what in the bill is going to address those issues of prevention. That's really a concern of mine.
And Margo, the bill says that marijuana would not be available to folks unless they were at least 21 years old. Does that help deal with some of your concerns?
So we know that the number one drug that young people use is alcohol. And we know that's available to people currently in the whole country, actually, 21 and over. And so it isn't about the concern for me would not be about the age, frankly. It's about access. If you have more people with a substance in their home and available, young people, that's usually where most people get their first drug experiences, directly or indirectly, from people they know and trust. And we often want to think about drug use very differently, like it's the drug dealer on the street. But frankly, that's actually not how most kids enter into experimenting with substances. It's indirectly or directly from their home, which is why we talk about where is your alcohol. It's why we have such a concern, frankly, around the prescription drug abuse problem is lots of people may have those in their home and they're not locked up. And so the reality is if it's in the home environment, we are going to see an increase in use.
Today in the program, we're looking at a new bill legalizing marijuana over at the State House. It's a House bill. What it does is allows individuals to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana and to grow several plants. It is not the state regulatory scheme that was discussed last year in the Senate. What are your thoughts about this? 1-800-639-2211. Chip, what about this idea that Margot raises, that the dangers and the health impacts of marijuana are pretty great, and so that legalizing another drug at this time doesn't seem to make any sense to her?
So I'll be the first to say that I think we need to do a much better job as a state, as a society, in substance abuse education for young people. I think one of the things that I got out of last year's testimony was that an understanding that we don't do a good enough job with that around marijuana or around alcohol in particular stood out to me. So I would absolutely agree that whether this bill passes or not, we really need to do a better job of educating people about the risks of any substance abuse. I have to say that when I, started thinking about this issue about whether or not it should be legalized, you can't help but make the comparison to alcohol. That's a substance that's legal for individuals over 21 in our state to consume. Marijuana, it provides something that some people like an effect on their body in the same way that alcohol does. I can't see a huge difference in terms of risk between alcohol and marijuana. They both certainly consuming either one in excess has risks both short and long term. But, we ought to allow people, adults, to make decisions as long as the decisions for their personal conduct doesn't impede public safety. And I think, marijuana falls squarely within that category of something that people should, adults should be able to make decisions about for themselves.
Margot, some people listening might be thinking, prohibition doesn't work. In the 1920s, when there was a prohibition against alcohol, it clearly didn't work. There's great access to marijuana today, probably greater access to marijuana for young people than alcohol. So what about that argument that prohibition is it doesn't work and so some other approach needs to be taken?
So it's a great question, and I've heard many times that prohibition is a failed policy. And you want to look at this issue and know there's different levels of changing laws. It isn't an all or nothing. So that's really important to start with. And Vermont actually has taken steps to move from prohibition. It's decriminalized right now to have an ounce or less. Marijuana is available for very specific medical conditions. And so I would say that actually is not an example of, that prohibition. So I guess I want to back up and ask, what problem are we trying to solve? So that's a really important starting point for me. And if one of the problems we are trying to solve by changing laws or policies is we're concerned about people, for example, being incarcerated or in concerns about people having a record, let's make changes that address that. Now, there is a myth out there, and I certainly know this is true in Vermont, that low-level marijuana users are spending time in jail, and that's absolutely not true, or that when you speak with police, that they're spending an inordinate amount of time when it comes to marijuana. That's actually not the case. Frankly, when you look at states like Colorado, they'll now tell you they're spending more time on resources. So again, the complexities of making a commercialized market, which Colorado did, there's a thriving black market. So whatever policy changes get made, there is pros and cons. And so this isn't just an all or nothing. And I just want to talk about that. If we do, if the black market is a concern and you are going to have people who have up to 2 ounces in their home and can have, my understanding is the bill talks for 2 mature plants and 7 immature plants, and we're calling that small amounts. And I'm curious what people's definition is of small amounts. I mean, an ounce of marijuana can generally roll people anywhere from 40 to 50, maybe up to 80 to 100 marijuana joints. That's 1 ounce. So I'm wondering, if we're talking about personal use, I have a lot of questions about what happens when people have 2 mature plants, 7 immature plants. How is that actually going to be managed and regulated and monitored? That's going to be very, very hard to control. So those are concerns that I have. 1 mature plant, from what I understand, and I'm not an expert on this. I talk with people about drug use, but my understanding from people who are is that you can actually cultivate the plant up to 4 times a year. And we're talking about, pounds of marijuana in someone's home when you're talking about 2 mature plants and 7 immature plants. And that's certainly not, I don't think that exceeds the definitions of personal consumption.
Let's go to our callers. We got a lot of folks who would like to weigh in on this subject. So let's start with Fran in Jamaica. Hi, Fran. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. First, I'd like to address what the lady was saying about the amount of cannabis. I will identify myself as a member of the community Vermont Homegrown. We have worked for several years for a legalization bill, and we do support at this time H-170. I would thank the representative for his work and all the other representatives involved in this. First of all, as to the amount of marijuana, I am currently a medical patient, so I am a grower, and I am allowed to grow. And I do grow 2 mature plants, and often I might have 7 immature plants. But first of all, as to an ounce of cannabis, the amount of cannabis cigarettes or joints that you can roll out of an ounce is generally around 30 to 40, not 80 or 100. Okay, you're going to roll a half a gram to a gram into each joint. So you have 28 point change grams. That you work the math out on that. Secondly, as to prevention, we are all not wanting anyone who is a minor to get access to this. But at this time, as has been pointed out by many senators, including Joe Benning, we are not effectively keeping minors from this plant. The amount of cannabis that is currently coming in from other states around the nation is phenomenal. You are not going to stop that. And we continue to penalize people, even through decrim, with fines and possible rehab. So that is not the answer. We have many people that grow for personal use in the state now. I will put that estimate at 1,000, but it's probably more. I'm sure it's going I wouldn't, but I don't want to go too high right now.
Okay,
but what
Fran. I think we got your drift, and Fran is a member of Vermont Homegrown. Let's turn to Mike in Essex. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, so I just wanted to make a comment. First of all, I think Margo made a lot of really good points as far as the cannabis issue in the state of Vermont. I guess my question is that what would be the core benefit? I mean, Colorado, obviously one of their major motivations for legalizing was tax revenue. But one of the problems that they're seeing coming out of it is that they're seeing a significant increase in the problem with impaired driving. So I guess the question is, aside from people having the benefit of being able to get high legally, what benefit is there if there isn't a tax benefit to it, especially for those people who aren't advocates of it? and think that it causes a serious social issue. I mean, it seems like we're just normalizing something that shouldn't be normalized.
Okay, Mike, Chip, how would you answer Mike's question?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, to the point that we're normalizing something, I think that's a recognition that that this is going on. People are consuming marijuana, those who want to, on a regular basis. And this sort of recognizes in part just what is happening in the state and saying, you know, if it's going on and we're, you know, we've said that it should be decriminalized, that we think that that behavior is not something that even warrants making it into a criminal act, why don't we just say, you know, the logical, the rational way to approach this is to say what you're doing, consuming something for your own enjoyment in a way that's not causing risk or harm to others, and you're an adult and can make that decision, why should the state say that's illegal in some way?
Today in the program, we're looking at a new marijuana legalization bill over at the Vermont House. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at a House bill legalizing marijuana. It takes a very different approach than the one in the Senate last year. This year's bill would allow individuals to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana and be able to grow several plants. Our guest to discuss this today, Representative Chip Conquest, who's the sponsor of the bill, and also Margot Austin, who is a student assistance program counselor at Burlington High School. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Chip, so I've got one question about it. Let's say this bill becomes law and individuals can possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana. Let's say I want to do that, but I don't grow it. Where am I supposed to get it? It would still be against the law to sell it to me, wouldn't it?
It would. And, you know, I think for me, part of this law is you know, I kind of think of it as a rationalization of our laws around marijuana in some way. But it doesn't go fully, you know, all the way there. So under this law, you would be able to share it with a friend if you wanted to. And so, you know, people who were unable to grow it in any fashion, if they had someone that they knew that was growing it and that person was willing to give them some, they could use it. But, you know, there is a point at which, you know, you have to have a supply somewhere. You know, and so if people have plants now and they wanted to share a plant with someone that they could then grow their own, that's fine under this bill. But, yeah, there is it doesn't go all the way towards making how you get a hold of marijuana completely simple for everyone.
Margot, you know, voters in Maine and Massachusetts approved referendum items legalizing marijuana. So some folks in Vermont say it's coming to New England. It's on the border. We might as well take steps to do it in a way that we think is appropriate for Vermont. What would you say to them?
Again, I would really stress that before we move on and further liberalize any laws, broad-based messaging and prevention must be in place. One of the things that I've heard as a concern, which I agree with wholeheartedly, is Vermont's use rates for marijuana are some of the highest in the nation. We actually rank number 2 when you look at youth use rates. And to Colorado. Colorado now ranks number 1. And again, Colorado has the legal drugs. So if we're talking about a tightly controlled market, that actually flies in the face of that theory. And Vermont ranks number 2. And so if we are concerned about that, which we should be, with a fat-soluble psychoactive drug that has THC rates that have been really unprecedented, we don't know how that's going to impact the brain long term. We have speculation that there'll even be more addiction because the rates of THC have risen so dramatically. So given all that, where I think we need to be putting our energies first is let's do broad-based messaging, prevention, and at the same time, if we want to talk about further decriminalization and concerns about people, because I have that same concern. I don't think that people with an addiction should be spending time in jail or not be able to further a job. That is really not in the best interest of us as a society. But to further liberalize a law without looking at broad-based messaging and prevention seems short-sighted to me, and we will continue to see increase in use. And as a culture, we will pay through that, through addiction and through, you know, the point got brought up about, comparing it to alcohol, and that gets said a lot. They're very different drugs. There's no question. They both cause damage, though. Different drugs, but they both have a significant impact.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who is calling from Richmond. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How are you today?
Fine, thanks.
I just wanted to make a brief point. We're talking about something affecting youth, but we're not talking about actually how to prevent that. And my concern is, if you've got recreational use in your home and you have children, there's likely to be secondhand smoke. Now, I make the correlation between smoking cigarettes and smoking marijuana, because if I have a drink, it affects me, but my drinking doesn't directly impact the person sitting next to me. If I'm smoking, whatever I'm smoking, the other person may be breathing in that smoke. We haven't talked about anything, and I agree with Margo that without any sort of infrastructure, we're going to let the horse go off without hooking it up to the cart, and we'll have no way of catching up. It just seems ill-advised at best.
Okay, John, we really appreciate your phone call. Let's turn to Jean, calling from Brattleboro. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for taking my call. My opinion and my position on this is nowhere near as well thought out as either of your two guests. It's clear that they've examined the minutiae of this issue way much more than I have, and I'll just say that my feeling is it's been a criminal offense to possess and use for way too long, and decriminalization and legalization is the answer. But that's not what I want to call about. I wanted to digress, if I could, and ask your guests to address, if they would, the issue of how the legal landscape has changed at a national level overnight, and how perhaps maybe we're having last year's discussion here, and how the new Attorney General has made it clear repeatedly his disdain and dislike for users and advocates for use of marijuana, and if they would perhaps be willing to speculate and consider how a legalization or further decriminalization law in Vermont might adversely affect our relationship with the federal government at this point, particularly in terms of federal law enforcement money that I know we get a lot of from the Justice Department. To me, that's this year's issue.
Okay, Gene, very good point. Chip, what about that? You've got an attorney general now, former Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, who is strongly opposed to the legalization of marijuana. Even if Vermont takes this step and passes your bill, won't Vermont still be in violation of federal law?
So I meant to bring up at the beginning, you know, one of the reasons for not thinking about a regulated market at this point is the possibility that because of the change administration in Washington that they may change how much they're allowing states to do. I can't make any predictions about that, but for that reason, I think maybe not investing in the infrastructure that would be required for a regulated market at this point is a smart move. You know, the feds or the administration, while yes, the new attorney general has been clear that he's opposed to legalization. They have sort of given some indications that that they're willing to think about states' rights and what what things should be left to states to decide for themselves. And, you know, I hope that they'll decide that this is an issue that that states ought to be able to decide. And I would think that, you know, they may look at something where a state that's decided to allow it small amounts for someone's own personal use is something that they don't feel like they need to wade into.
Margo, what do you think about Gene's comments that perhaps the Trump administration will look at the legalization of marijuana at the state level very differently than the Obama administration did?
He brings up a really interesting point that on the federal level, and try to explain this to anyone, but imagine youth, you're trying to do education. Federally, it's prohibited, but at state's level, they're moving in a different direction. And then there's medical. So it's a really complex issue. I don't think we really know, frankly, where it's going to go in terms of whether or not they will exert the power that they can, frankly, over states and hold states accountable to this. And so that is it's an unknown. I would say that caller is accurate about that.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ray in Montgomery. Hey, Ray, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a question about how this might affect the ski industry. I'd heard anecdotally from someone in the industry that bookings for college groups were down in Utah because more of these college groups now that were booking, you know, rooms and stuff for a week preferred to go to Colorado where they could legally buy marijuana and make that part of their vacation. And I'm just wondering if anyone's thought about whether this would change things for the ski industry, because apparently it has had an effect in Utah. More of these college groups are taking their vacations in Colorado now, and I'll listen off the air.
Okay. Chip, Colorado has the full-blown retail structure in place. You're talking about something quite different. Do you think people would come skiing in Vermont just because you could possess up to 2 ounces here?
You know, I don't claim to have any kind of a crystal ball. I'm not sure I could guess whether that would be attractive enough to bring people to our state or not.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Jim, who is calling from Littleton, New Hampshire. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
So I recently moved here from Washington State. And there's a lot of things that you guys are talking about that do have merit and don't have merit. And allow me to shine some light on some of this. Washington State, we legalized it. Everybody was cowering in a corner wondering if everybody was going to all of a sudden start being addicted to heroin and everything. Let me tell you, in this area of the Northeast, you have 10 times the problem that we do in Seattle with heroin. There's none of that stuff floating around. I mean, there is, but not like up here. Your efforts are much better utilized focusing on your heroin epidemic in the Northeast than they are focusing on the occasional guy driving down the road with a couple of joints in his pocket. Now, to get back to the caller that was talking about whether or not the ski areas would be affected, certainly I'm not going to take a drive one or two states just so I can smoke a joint and have some fun on the ski hills. I will avoid coming to Vermont and New Hampshire, however, with the penalty that under arrest, you're going to be thrown in jail for 5 years. That will keep your tourism away, and the tourism and the people that rely on it, all of that's going to suffer. The infrastructure of Washington State just brought in $135 million this year. Our parks are looking great. Our infrastructure is looking great. Your infrastructure is horrible. Your bridges are falling down. Your towns are falling down. And there's no comparison. The regulation in Washington, you get carded twice, once when you go into the store, once when you're buying. That hermetically sealed bag gets put into another bag, which gets stickered and taped. And you're told, don't smoke this on the way home in your car. It's an open container law. You'll get arrested. In fact, you are told probably best to put it in the trunk until you get to your own residence where you can imbibe at your will.
Okay, Jim, we really appreciate your phone call. We're almost out of time. Chip, tell us the next couple of steps for this bill? It's something that the House Judiciary Committee is taking an active look at right now?
It is. We started testimony on it yesterday. We will certainly have more testimony in the next week or two, and then we'll have a vote in the committee. And if it passes out of committee, then, of course, it will go to the floor for the whole House to vote on. And if it makes it past that, then it goes to the Senate.
Do you anticipate having any public hearings over this bill?
You know, I've talked to our chair a little bit about that. I don't think at this point we're planning to have public hearings this year. We had large ones last year, and I think we've heard from folks, and that testimony is on record, and I think many of us remember it.
Well, the debate over this new approach to legalizing marijuana is just beginning at the State House. Many thanks to our guests today, Chip Conquest and Margot Austin. Thank you both very much for being on the program.
Thank you, Bob. It's good to be here.
Bob, thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
And coming up next, we're going to try to have our conversation with Senator Patrick Leahy about last night's important court ruling that rejected President Trump's travel ban. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Right now, we have Senator Patrick Leahy on the line. We're going to talk about last night's important ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which unanimously rejected President Trump's travel ban from nine largely Muslim countries. Senator Leahy, it's great to have you on the program.
Bob, it's good to be with you. Thank you.
So, Senator, what do you think are the most important parts of the appeals court decision?
Well, I think what they're saying is that nobody's above the law, not even the president. And we have a constitutional form of government. We balance that. We make sure that there are checks and balances. And the courts are independent. You know, the president criticizes one court because they looked into some of his business dealings, which everybody agreed should have been looked into. And his criticism of that was not that he obeyed the law in his business dealings, but that the judge's parents were from Mexico, therefore he's unqualified. On this one, he says, well, they don't seem to have a high school ability. Well, come on. These are some of the best judges in the country. And I think it should be a lesson to the president that the law and the Constitution protects every one of us. No one's above the law. That includes me, you, and the president.
Well, the Trump administration argued that the judicial branch of government does not have the authority to review national security policies of a president because it could put the country at risk. Is the president wrong?
Of course he's wrong. Suppose the president said, I'm just going to arbitrarily lock up people. We're just going to pick people by their looks and we'll lock them up, but it's for national security. Well, how long would that last before you'd have people getting out? Or what we saw before, when a president wanted to authorize torture, which would break the law, the court stepped in and said, you can't do that, and the torture stopped.
So I want to make sure I understand this decision correctly, and you're a lawyer, so I know you can help me out here. Basically, the court was saying, if I understand it, that it does have the responsibility and the authority to review national security policies of an administration. And if the administration makes a compelling case for what it wants to do, then the court might authorize that. Do I have that right?
Yes, the court might authorize it, but it's still got to be following the law. An arbitrary ban, which, I mean, the president promised during his campaign, he would ban Muslims from the United States. But we don't have a religious test in the U.S. You can't ban somebody based on their religion. That's what this appeared to be. And I think what they're saying, you've got to show why you have a specific thing. If you say that somebody on the battlefield working with Al-Qaeda or ISIL can't be allowed in the U.S., great. Nobody has a problem with that. We have already a lot of scanning of people. You go 2 or 3 years to get a visa. But interestingly enough, the two biggest attacks in this country, one was Oklahoma City. That was an American, actually served in the military, a resident of Oklahoma. And 9/11, those were all from Egypt, not Egypt, but Saudi Arabia. You don't see Saudi Arabia on this ban, and you don't see, of course, Oklahoma on this ban.
So do you think this travel ban could be rewritten by the Trump administration that would make it acceptable to the courts?
Not they're going to do it in the haphazard way they've done it. Kind of a slapdash thing. Here, I am president. I've put this through. No consultation. Nobody looking at it. It's almost like Steve Bannon and a couple of others around him said, hey, you're president. You go ahead and do whatever you want. Well, it doesn't work that way. It's not an emperor. It's elected president. And I think what the, if I would advising the president, I'd say, let's go back to what we did 2 or 3 years ago. The Senate passed a very good bipartisan immigration bill. The House refused to bring it up. I think some of the Tea Party types were opposed to it. Well, let's go back and see that framework. Put together a good immigration bill. You can write in specific standards to get visas, and you might go somewhere. But look what's happened. We have, this is stopping people. It's going to certainly cost our travel industry hundreds of millions of dollars because people are afraid to go here. They say, why should we go to the U.S.? We might get caught in something like this. Let's go somewhere else. Students, professors, others who want to come here are stopped. I had a Middlebury College professor. He's a lawful permanent resident of Vermont. He was on sabbatical in his home country of Iran with his wife and 2 children. And they were bounced back and forth, wondering whether they'd even be allowed in here. And finally, because he is a lawful permanent resident, the White House said, well, it could be a national interest to allow them back in. Now, they were going to remain in Iran for a few more months. They cut his sabbatical short because they're afraid this White House sort of makes up its mind on the fly. They may change their mind tomorrow.
Well, Senator, it appears that this case, one way or another, is headed to the U.S. Supreme Court, where there are now 8 members. Do you think the court will deadlock over this?
I have no idea. Of course, there's no reason for it to be an 8-member court. I think the Republican leadership basically snubbed the Constitution by not doing what they are required to do and have a vote one way or the other in Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland would have been confirmed easily, a strong bipartisan vote. Now, of course, we have before us a nominee for the Supreme Court. The president said he let the vetting be done by some right-wing, very right-wing lobbying groups and special interest groups, and they gave him the list who to pick from. Well, that doesn't do much for the credibility of his nominee.
But this is also a nominee who, didn't you vote for Mr. Gorsuch when he was going to the appeals court?
I did. He is not who I would have picked, but there's, you know, there's a Republican president. I thought he was qualified for the Court of Appeals. But now we'll look at how did he act when he's on the Court of Appeals. I voted for probably 97% of nominees by both Republican and Democratic presidents. But when you talk about the Supreme Court, then you have to be especially careful.
We've got just a little bit of time left. Do you think that this whole controversy will enter into the Senate's discussion and review of Judge Gorsuch to be on the Supreme Court? Does all this now kind of affect each other?
No, it's a good question. I think it already has. I know that the senators who have met with him, these questions have come up. And I'm going to meet with him this coming week. I didn't meet with him this week because, you know, we were in session to 2 and 3 o'clock in the mornings. It was a very, very crowded schedule. I didn't think that would be fair to him. Next week we'll have a little bit more flexibility, but I certainly intend to ask him questions about it.
Senator Patrick Leahy, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today and to discuss this very important issue.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'm glad you raised it.
That's Vermont Edition for today. Coming up on Monday, with a hunt taking place this weekend, debate keeps raging over coyote hunting in the state, both the ethics and the effect on local ecosystems. And on the next Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about the regulations, the science, and the controversy surrounding this issue. So send us your questions and comments, and then listen live Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed our program today. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.